stack it is that David is doing there, and what the relationship was that is so important to David now and is going to be so important to David going forward. So let's take a look. I'm going to open up the source sheet. If anyone wants, I can share it too. But here it is. And the shir we're going to really divide into a couple of pieces. First, we're going to look at what Chazal had to say about the friendship and why exactly I thought it was so important, what that tells us about friendship. We'll look at what made that friendship so amazing, the fateful decision Yonasan had to make, and how David memorialized Yonasan in those first moments, right? Those first moments when he's told that Shaul is dead and Yonasan is dead, the crown prince is dead and the king is dead. He knows he's on his way to becoming king, and yet the first response David has, it's amazing. The first response David has is not thinking in terms of politics. It's not thinking in terms of where should I go? Who should I contact? What's the next military maneuver? His first reaction is to look back at the friendship that he's had with Yonasan. And it's something which he's going to be dedicated to going forward. So let's begin. So source sheet, first number one, any discussion of David and Yonasan cannot begin without the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. For the Mishnah says, any love which is dependent on something, right? Kol ava shitzuliya b'davar, batel davar b'dela ava. You lost the thing, you lost the love. Now the question is going to be, what does this mean? What's a love which depends on something versus a love that does not depend on something? Every love depends on something, right? Everybody in our lives who we have a close relationship with, there is a reason for it. So it's unclear what exactly the Mishnah means. So the Mishnah clarifies, what is the paradigmatic example of love which does not depend on anything? Sheinat Tzliyah B'davar, Zo Avas David Yonasan. That is a love which did not depend on anything. Now, okay, what exactly does that mean? So the Rambam and the Parash Mishnayos write their comments, and he explains that the reason why the love between David and Yonasan is an everlasting love, it's a love which we would not refer to as love which is dependent on a thing, is because regular friendships, regular relationships, are grounded in some physical benefit. The example the Mishnah gives is a sexual relationship, that of Amnon, David's son, with Tamar. There could be a quid pro quo relationship, right? You have friends who are friends because they derive certain benefits from each other. Well, if that benefit is not there anymore, you know, you see people on a baseball team and they look like the best of friends. All of a sudden, you know, the guy's on the next team and they're not high-fiving anymore, right? We see that all the time. David Yonasan explains the Rambam, here's the difference. This was a friendship which was founded not in common benefits, but in common values. When the reason for the love is in Yan Eloki, right? It was a godly driver behind the relationship between David and Yonasan. That's the true knowledge. By definition, if you have a relationship which is grounded in mutual perspectives and mutual love for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's going to last forever. Because the cause of that love lasts forever. The values are eternal. The Torah is eternal. Hashem is eternal. So if you have a friendship which is grounded in the mutual values that David and Yonasan share, that is going to be our example of avash inat liyabedavar. It's a love that doesn't depend on a specific thing which can change from one day to the next, one year to the next. The values that David and Yonasan have are there forever. It's the same values that they looked up to in their time, that we look up to in our time, and that is what keeps this amazing friendship going. So we're going to look at one pasuk, which is going to show that this is the case black on white, and then we're going to have to flesh it out. First, let's look at a pasuk which shows that this was indeed, at least the way the Malbim understands it. This is how we're going to see the Navi tell us this was the friendship, and then we'll look at those values in action. The very first time that Yonasan ever lays eyes on David, right after David defeats Goliath, right? David comes back from defeating Goliath. He talks to Shaul. Immediately afterwards, who's next to Shaul? Who's been Shaul's right-hand man until now? It's been Yonasan. The Navi says, Nefesh Yonasan nikshara b'yeh nefesh David. Their souls were tied together. He loved David as his own soul. Comments the Malbim. What does it mean? He loved him like his own soul. So the Rambam says, or the Malbim says, Ratzel lomar mitzad ruach ha-gvura v'ha-ktusha. Those are the two words. I should have bolded that also. Strength they have in common, and kedusha they have in common. Those are the two binding factors for David and Yehonasan. That is what causes the connection. Ki ha-domeh yimasheich v'shtokeik el ha-domeh. Things, right? Opposites attract, the opposite of that. Similars attract. David and Yehonasan, the fact that they shared the same values, they shared the same perspectives, that is what is bringing them together, this beautiful image of Nikshara Nefesh Yonasan and Nefesh David, the souls being tied together. Then the Malbim explains when the Pasuk says that Yonasan loved David like his own soul. So the Malbim, and we'll see where he's getting this idea from. So he says this was not a friendship. Lo haisa avas ha'arev o ha'mawil. This was not the love that you'd have for somebody who's there as a guarantor or an alliance, someone who's going to help you. Rak ava atzmait sheyahav hatov es hatov, where the love just loves the good. Vaisa ha'ava kinafshav sheyava azashin l'mala himen, where love is just loving the good for its own sake, and there's nothing better than that. Now, what the Malbim is drawing on here, these categories he's talking about, are the categories also from the Rambam elsewhere in Pirkei Avos, earlier in Masechta, when the Mishnah tells us, "Knei lecha chaver," you should acquire for yourself a friend. And the Rambam there has an interesting discussion. He quotes Aristotle, actually, who divides friends into three categories. It's the same ones that the Malbim is talking about over here. The Rambam says you can have a friend which is ohev toelis. You have a friend for a purpose, which is an alliance. So an example, business partners. They can get along well because they're making lots of money. A king and his army. They can get along well because the king gets lots of power and the army can get lots of spoils. Ohev menucha, that is what we would call a friendship. Whether it's a friendship of a man or wife, friendship of two friends who enjoy each other's company, right? Those are people who are together, not because of the material benefits that they get. That's the avas toeles. It's because of the emotional benefits that they get. That's the ohev menucha. And then the highest level of friendship, ohev ma'alav, the one that the Rambam thinks, is what the Mishnah in Avos is urging us to find. Like, after all, why does the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos need to tell us to get a friend? You know, from the time we're 3 years old, we instinctively understand that humans are social people. We need to have friends. No, the Rambam explains, the Mishnah is saying, you want a very specific kind of friend. You want the ohev ma'alav, where it's not a friendship just for the material or emotional benefits it provides. Rather, says the Rambam, ohev ma'alahu, shiyet havash nehem mekavanasam davar achad. You want two people where the values and the goals are in the same line. Uhu ato, that is the ultimate friendship. The one where they're not just, enjoying each other's company, which David and Yonasan for sure do. The ultimate friendship, the avat ma'alah, right, is the one which is founded in value. So that is what the Navi is telling us David and Yehonasan had. Now, it's incumbent upon us to understand what those values were, right? What was it exactly that David and Yehonasan shared so much in common, which fuels this unbelievable bond that we look up to as a friendship, down to this very day? So the short version of the answer is they're just extremely similar people. Everyone knows the story of David and Goliath, right? One young boy who's so much weaker and yet has faith in Ribbono Shel Olam and comes with a slingshot, and nobody in the Jewish army thinks he has a chance, and no one in the Plishti army thinks he has a chance, and none of them understand what David understands, which is it doesn't matter how strong you are, it matters if you have Hashem on your side. And David fights Goliath, and he defeats Goliath, and then as soon as he wins, the Plishtim are all shocked, the Plishtim all run away, and the Bnei Yisrael win a phenomenal victory. Everyone knows that story. But many fewer people know is that there was actually a very similar story in a previous battle between Bnei Yisrael and the Plishtim, three prakim earlier, in Shmuel Aleph Parak Yudalev. The Jews and the Plishtim are fighting. They're in the land of Shevet Binyamin. We actually know exactly where they were. It's a similar situation. You have, just like when it came to Goliath and Bnei Yisrael, the Plishtim were on one side of the valley and the Jews on the other side. And then there's this no man's land in the middle and Goliath is there. And then David alone goes into the no man's land. There's a very similar setup in the battle in Perek Yudal. The Plishtim are on one side of this stream over here. Bnei Yisrael are on the other. And then you have this this riverbed, which is creating this no man's land in between. To give a sense, you can't really see it so well from the drone's eye view, but you know, you get to the closer angle, you can see how steep the cliffs are, right? So this is the riverbed between the two camps. Let's just scroll up for a second, just so we can have an idea of what we're talking about. The Plishtim are over here, the Jews are over here, and then there's this standoff. Who's going to make the next move? Who's going to go into this no man's land, this river in the middle? Now, the Plishtim at the time are far, 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 far better equipped militarily than Bnei Yisrael. They outnumber them significantly. They have far superior weapons. Militarily, it seems like Bnei Yisrael do not have a chance. And yet what happens? So we see one man take the lead and one man not take the lead. There are so many parallels to the story of David and Goliath. Introduced to Yehonasan, right? Bnei Yisrael are there. Everyone's stuck. They're not sure what to do. Yehonasan is the one who takes action. Let's go cross over. Let's go cross over the no man's land, right? That's on the other side. And he doesn't tell his father. While Yehonasan is aggressively moving, Shaul is sitting. Shaul stays put. The exact same experience that David has with Shaul. With David has a Shaul and Goliath. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Goliath says, where is the ish? Send me a man. Send a man to come fight me. Rashi already points out, it's obvious that the man who is supposed to fight Goliath is the strongest and tallest of the Plishtim, so it should be the person who's the tallest of the Jews, which is Shaul. Shaul is supposed to fight Goliath. Instead, Shaul stays back in the camp. And David advances. Three prakim earlier had the exact same experience. Shaul is tarrying in the camp, and Yehonasan is the one who is pushing and is moving forward. And what gives Yehonasan the crazy idea that this can possibly be successful? Well, he says it straight out. It's really super appropriate that we're learning this right before Hanukkah. Because Yehonasan just says to his lad, right, he's got a guy who schleps his weapons, the Nosei Kelim. So he tells him, let's go. Let's go to the garrison of these uncircumcised Philistines. Ulai yasa Hashem lanu, ki ein lashem matzur doshia rav umat. There is nothing which is stopping Hashem to save, right, by many or by few. Now that's something which is very, very easy for us to say over Hanukkah. Very easy for us to say during Alanisim. You know, oh yeah, yeah, right. Hashem put the rabin biad me'atim, right? But Yonasan doesn't just say it. Yonasan lives it. He has enough bitachon that he can actually go forward, leaving the whole army behind, and he's going to take everyone on by himself. Now, that sounds crazy, to take everyone on by himself. So Yonasan's not totally crazy. Yonasan does look for a sign, because I'll have a whole discussion about this. He says, look, we will show ourselves to the Plishtim, and then we'll see if they tell us that we're coming after you, which is what they really should say, if they have full confidence, then we're going to stand down. But if they tell us, why don't you come up, you know, leave no man's land and come to our camp, then we'll know to fight them. So for the second time in 5 psukim, Yonasan says, the outcome of the battle completely depends on the will of Ribbono Shel Olam. The military story does not matter at all. And then 3 psukim later, Yonasan follows through on his plan. The Plishtim respond in the way he was hoping. They say, why don't you come up to us, right? Climb up that cliff, and then we'll deal with you. And Yonasan hears that, and he immediately understands, Acharai, ki nasanam Hashem biyad Yisrael. He doesn't take the credit for himself. Nasanam Hashem biyad Yisrael. So we see a few things in this story. We see the energy and the courage that Yehonasan has. We see the leadership and the charisma. I mean, you know, it's one thing to be Yehonasan. I imagine that Yonasan's Nosei Kelim, his weapons schlepper, was probably not one of the greatest Jews of all time. So I'm sure he was an Elchiyid. I'm sure he was a wonderful guy. but he wasn't one of the greatest all-timers. You know, we do not talk nowadays looking to inspiration from Yonasan's Nosei Keilim. And yet, Yonasan's, the genuine feeling he has, the leadership, the charisma, and the overflowing true Yira Shamayim is infectious. And the Nosei Keilim is all in. And they go forward. He has Hashem's name on his lips all the time. It's natural. Yudkei Vavkei, he's mentioning Hashem again and again and again. And in all of these areas, the charisma, the energy, the courage, the Yira Shamayim, David has the exact same experience. They are two peas in a pod. And we want to talk about, you know, total energy. A couple of weeks ago, we introduced David. We said, really, the best way to think of David is to think of somebody who has the Hakol Kol Yaakov, Hayadayim Yidei Esav. He has the fusion of Yaakov and Esav, but in the best of ways, where he's able to combine that energy and power and charisma of Esav, everything that Yitzchak was hoping for. He's able to combine that with the spiritual purity of Yaakov. Well, we see that energy from Yonasan in the very next pasuk. We have the call of Yaakov, where he says, Acharai kinasnam Hashem b'yad Yisrael. We see the voice of Yaakov, that statement right there. In the very next line, we see the hands of Esav, but they're being put to productive use. Vayal Yonasan al yadav al raglav. So Yonasan is climbing on his hands and on his feet. And at one level, we can just visualize what he has to do physically. Scrolling up for a second, he's got to crawl up this cliff, literally, with, you know, enemy pushed him up on the top. But Rashi also flags this, and Rashi makes an important comment. Let's see what he says. Right? Al yadav al raglav tilamar bechol kach umritza. With all strength and speed. Yonasan is going all out. Right, that's the effort that he shows, and there too he shares in common with David. Right, just to highlight the connection that they have. When Yonasan said that Hashem can save with big or small, David three prakim later is saying the exact same thing. When he has his epic confrontation with Goliath, what does he tell him? Everyone's going to see lo b'cherev, lo b'chanes, Yoshia Hashem ki l'Hashem ha-melchama. Hashem doesn't need a sword. Hashem doesn't need a spear. The war belongs to Hashem. Yonah said the same thing. Hashem doesn't need many soldiers. Hashem doesn't need a few soldiers. Salvation comes from Hashem. The same core message that they have. And the truth is, this goes even further. Because this is the core debate in all of Sefer Shmuel. The whole book, which deals with the reality of a Jewish king, right? Transitioning from the world of miracles and the world of direct reliance on the Ribbono Shel Olam to a more complicated world where politics are in play, where strategy has to be in play. But Hashem is still the one ultimately running the show. And we have two basic perspectives. There's the right perspective and the wrong perspective. The right perspective is the one that ultimately recognizing that Hashem is the one in charge. And the wrong perspective are people think they're the ones running the show. Dev and Yonasan are on the right side. And where do they get this? Where do they get this original perspective from? It is originally stated by no less than Chana herself in her song at the beginning of the book. The very conclusion of her song, when she says, Lo b'kavach yigbar ha'ish. Hashem is the one in charge. Man, the outcome, right? The victory is not determined by the strength. That's a message which seems so simple, but it's a message which Shaul is never going to really understand. Some of the other people in Sefer Shmuel are never going to really understand. There are three people in Sefer Shmuel who understand. I guess besides Chama. Shmuel understands it. He's the Navi. But David and Yehonasan, who are both warriors, who are both royalty, who are both leaders, military leaders of men, they're simultaneously able to understand this core message. Lo b'chavach yigbar ha'ish. You can boil it down to there. You want to ask, what is that timeless value that the Rambam was talking about, that the friendship of Yehonasan and David is eternally grounded in? It is realizing this piece right here. That even though they're both generals and one is a prince and one is a king, they both know front and center, Lo b'kach yigbar ha'ish, ki l'Hashem ha'melchama. Ki l'Hashem ha'melchama. Yeah. Now, that's the shared value. Of course, the worth taking a few minutes to appreciate the tragedy of what happens with Yehonasan, right? There's a reason why David is going to be mourning for him instead of celebrating with him at the beginning of Shmuel Beis. And Yonasan's core dilemma is that even as he really embodies Yirat Shamayim, like a few other people in Tanakh, he faces an impossible test. And we'll see what that impossible test is compared to. It's compared to the most famous impossible test in history. He's caught between love for David and respect for David and recognition that David should be king and loyalty to his father. Yonatan is fiercely loyal. Now, we know the story, right? The Haftorah for Machar Chodesh, the story of David and Yonatan, the last great meeting. It's not the last meeting, but the famous last meeting between them, with the story with the arrows, and David is out in hiding, and there's the Rosh Chodesh meal, and David doesn't show up, and Shaul gets furious, and Yonatan and David part ways. But there's gonna be a lot there, but the background to that is also very important. Yonasan, his whole life is trying desperately to keep these two people that are the centers of his world together. His father Shaul, who he's loyal to, and his best friend and brother-in-law, David, who he's ideologically aligned with and knows religiously is correct, desperately trying to keep them together. But it's important to understand is that he's not crazy for thinking that he can do so. Because initially, at least, he's actually successful. In Perek Yotes, so this is only one chapter after the defeat of Goliath, Shaul has already tried to kill David. He wants David dead, and everyone knows that. Yehonasan is able to restore the peace. Navi says, Yehonasan and Shaul chafes b'David ma'ob. We know that they love each other, very good friends. But Yehonasan is able to bring them back together. He's able to restore the peace. And then basically the next, three prakim, Yonasan is going to try again and again to recapture the magic in a bottle of that pasuk right there, Vayhi lefanav ke'atzmol shoshon, where Yonasan succeeded in getting David and Shaul's relationship restored. Yonasan is going to try again and again, and ultimately he's going to fail. And that's going to leave him with the choice he has to make. Does he choose David or does he choose Shaul? He chooses the third choice. He tries to choose both. We'll see how that's going to work. So, and in Perek Chaf, I want to talk a little bit more about the values that they share. And it's important just to know, because the more we understand Yehonasan, what makes Yehonasan tick, the more we'll understand what makes David tick. Look how many times in just a few psukim, Yehonasan is mentioning Hashem's name. The psukim here are where Yehonasan is proposing to David, here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to tell, we'll figure out if there's a chance for you to reconnect with Shaul. I'm going to go to the meal, and if things work, right, so then we're going to do the arrows episode. If things work, then you're going to come back. I'll tell you after 3 days. If things don't work, then we'll deal with it. But every single pasuk, Yonasan is mentioning Shem Hashem. First, he swears in Hashem's name in pasuk Yibes. Pasuk Yigimel, right? He swears a second time. Ko yas Hashem liyonasan v'chol Yosef. Another oath. And this one is very important, because there's something else that's here, which we'll come back to in 1 second. Pasuk Yedaled, right? If you show the chesed of Hashem, Pasuk Tezvav, talking about Hashem cutting off David's enemies, which is a reference to Shaul's family, right? Yonasan saying Hashem's going to wipe enemies. Pasuk after Pasuk after Pasuk, Yonasan is invoking the Shem Hashem. Now, what's so important about the line in red in Pasuk Yigimel? So Yonasan says to David, look, if Shaul does not accept you back, so I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you to run, I'll tell you it's not safe, you'll leave, you'll go in peace. V'hi Hashem imach kasher haya im avi. Hashem will be with you as he was with my father. What is packed into those 7 words? A recognition that what matters is who Hashem is with. And right now, David is totally alone. He's about to be a fugitive. But it doesn't matter, because Yonasan recognizes that all that matters, right? It doesn't matter, Rabim or Me'atim. What matters is who Hashem is with, and Hashem is with David, and Yonasan recognizes that. And Yonasan recognizes that Hashem has chosen David. not Shaul. Shaul's the king. They're in the palace. Yonasan's the crown prince. David is a wanted dead man. But Yonasan recognizes that David's been chosen, and he personally is willing to go along with that. I'm sure he'd love to be king, but he is totally willing to recognize what Hashem's choice is. Look at the Mefarshim in this for 1 second. Right? Rabbeinu Yeshaya, on the line, you're going to succeed. Hashem was with my father, and my father was successful, but Yonasan now recognizes that has changed, and we're going to be willing to go along with it. It's not what I want, but if it's what Hashem wants, then it's what I'm going to want as well. And then on the line, Hashem will take it, will demand from David's enemies. So when Yeshaya says, who's that talking about? It's talking about Shaul. It's talking about Shaul. But nonetheless, Yonasan is willing to make the declaration. He's willing to make the curse. Why? Because he loves David so much, and he understands that David's going to be king. He recognizes what's happening. He's not denying it. He's accepting it. This is the will of Hashem. I'm going to go along with it, and I'm going to go along with it gladly. The Tudas David says that Yonasan makes David swear again because he's so glad for David. He's going to be king. So he says, David, you have to swear again. When you are king, you're going to take care of my descendants. Okay. Now, what's alarming, though, is that what exactly does Yonasan propose? Look up again for 1 second. Look at the covenant that Yonasan proposes. And it's not one between David and Yonasan, but it's one for Yonasan's descendants. Lo tachris chastacha me'im beisi. You're going to take care of my household. Not me, but my household. And that's explicit at the end. After David and Yonasan part ways, Yonasan says, Yeshemini benacha, ubein zari, ubein zaracha ad olam. I think it's the Barbanel who comments. He says, the reason why Yonasan wants the focus of the covenant to be on the household and not on the person himself is because at least at this point, Yonasan holds out no hope for himself. He says, I'm done. Why does Yonasan hold no hope for himself? Because he's torn between Shaul on the one hand, David on the other. And he says, I can't leave my father. David's about to run away. Yonasan says, I can't leave him. I have to stay put. I know that Hashem is not with my father. I know my father is going down. He says, I feel bound. I have to go down with the ship. So he gives up. He gives up any hope for himself. He's not in it for himself. Yonasan's never in it for himself. David's not going to be in it for himself either, right? He's just in it for Kal Yisrael. He's in it for the future. He's in it for the rest of Hashem. But he has to stay put. Now, we should wonder, and I think the fact that we can even make this demand, the fact that Hashem is willing to make this demand of Yonasan just shows his greatness. Did Yonasan make the right choice or not? Should he have just gone all out and run away together with David? Or was he correct in trying to stay in staying put and, you know, amazingly being loyal to David, but also staying put? So it's fascinating to see that there are a number of parallels between the whole passage of David and Yonasan, the famous passage where they hug and then part ways, and the passage of Akedas Yitzchak. First of all, the two words which come up again and again and again in the story are fathers and lads. Look how many times Yonasan mentions, and David will mention, Avi, right? Avicha or Avi, your father, my father. The father, which is the word that comes up again and again in the Akedah. When Avram and Yitzchak are talking to each other, it's Avi B'ni, my father, my son, my father, my son. They go back and forth again and again and again. And also, likewise, the focus on the Na'ar. There should be more. Yeah, here we go. Look how many times the word Na'ar. At the end, like the whole story with the arrows and the lad, and like it's such a big deal for some reason. We have to come back to him again and again and again. We have to mention this lad like a million times. But if we think about the fact that there are 6 or 7 linguistic parallels between Akedas Yitzchak and the story over here, for having things which are happening on the third day, right? Avram and Yitzchak are going to get to Har Moriah on the third day. Yonasan and David are going to reconnect on the third day. The bracha focuses on the seed, The bracha for Avraham is that your zera shall inherit his enemies. And the bracha for Yonasan and David is that Hashem is going to be between my zera and your zera. Love shows up front and center. Hashem's first command to Avraham, Esbincha Asher Ahavta, bring your son who you love. And of course, Yonasan's love for David. Avas Nafsho Avo, he loved him like his own soul. The focus on coming to the place. Avraham and his lads, those lads around the Na'arim, they get to the place. And likewise, Yehonasan said to David, you're going to come to the place. We're going to designate a specific location. But there also happens to be a big stone monument in Eben Ha'ezel. You have the Na'ar with the arrows, the vision of Yitzchak, the other Na'ar, you know, holding the sticks. And this line of Na'ar lo yada me'uma, the lad who did not know anything. Well, me'uma, that's another word which also is rarely used, but it comes up in the context of the Akedah. And who's the lad who doesn't know anything in the Akedah? It's Yitzchak. It's Yitzchak himself. So why are there 7, 8, 9 linguistic parallels between Akedah Yitzchak and the story of David and Yehonasan? I think the simple answer is because those are the two cases where we can look at Tanakh and we can look at somebody who has the ultimate decision to make. The ultimate test between what my will is, what I think is the right thing to do, and what Hashem thinks is the right thing to do. And the question for Yonasan is, and he can go so far, right? Hashem would never give this test, because this is an even more brutal test than the test that Avram has. At least the test Avram Avinu has, Hashem is the one who tells him. Hashem tells him, sacrifice Yitzchak. Yonasan never gets any nevuah telling him, go be with David. He has to completely come to that conclusion on his own. On his own, without a divine command, is he going to be willing to go all the way to recognize and say, I have to leave Shaul and be with David? Right? And what is the result, the ultimate result of this personal Akedah for Yonasan? Many ways even more difficult than the Akedah of David. He chooses choice C, right? He doesn't go with David. He doesn't go with Shaul. He just tries to stay in the middle. And he says, look, I have no hope for myself, right? I know full well what's going to happen. I know Hashem is bringing Shaul's house to an end, but I feel ethically bound I can't leave. I would suggest that the connections drawn to the Akedah are very gently pointing to the fact that Yehonasan should have gone with David. But it gives us an indication, number one, how deep that challenge can be. How deep that challenge can be between going for what you want and going for what Hashem wants. And even if Yehonasan does not get all the way there, even being in the Parsha and getting to the 1 yard line is something which is absolutely unbelievable. And that is exactly the core value which he shares with David. David is never going to be tested to this degree. It's going to be tested. He's not going to be tested to this degree. That's a test that Hashem only gave to Yonasan. But it's an example where even though he may not get all the way there, he gets so far that it's an example which is going to serve as an inspiration to David for all time. Now, that, you know, to spend a few minutes at the end, let's look at the way that David deals with his with Yonasan's legacy. This unbelievable friendship, which is founded between two people who are two of the greatest neshamos we've ever seen, who have so much in common. So what does David do when he finds out that really his ideological soulmate, right, his ideological twin, has been killed on the battlefield? Exactly as Yehonasan anticipated, exactly as he foresaw, he goes down with the ship. Abarbanel has a fascinating comment when the Na'ar Amaleki shows up in David's camp and tells him the news that Shaul and Yehonasan have been killed. So the Abarbanel asks a very reasonable question. He says, why is the lad telling David that Shaul and Yehonasan have been killed? He's missing information. He should tell David that Shaul and all of Shaul's children have been killed. Politically, that's very important because that means that David is now next in line. But for some reason, he only mentions Shaul and Yehonasan. So the Abarbanel suggests that the reason is very simple. The Na'ar Amaleki is there in the aftermath of the battle. There, unfortunately, are many Jewish bodies that are strewn around the battlefield because we lost the battle. So he didn't see everybody. But who does he see? He sees Shaul and he sees Yehonasan, who are lying on the battlefield right next to each other. Because Barbanel says that Yehonasan never left his father's side. His father tries to kill him. His father tries to kill him twice. That's another thing that Yehonasan and David share in common, is that when Shaul gets jealous of them, because Shaul realizes that both these people, these younger people, are more charismatic, are more natural and effective leaders than he is, he tries to get them both. He tries to get them both killed. Despite all that, the loyalty that Yehonasan shows to his father, who frankly didn't really deserve it, they're literally, you know, next to each other in life, they're next to each other in life. So David makes a kinnah, and it's an amazing kinnah. But David has a very simple challenge with the kinnah that he composes. Politically, he feels that he needs to eulogize Shaul. That's not only politics. There's also immense personal respect for Shaul. But it is clear that he does not have the same emotional attachment to Shaul that he has to Yehonasan. I mean, how could he, right? The relationship with Yehonasan is the greatest friendship of all time. So he needs to eulogize Shaul, but he also needs to show, without being offensive to the memory of Shaul, he needs to show the overwhelming love he had for Yehonasan, right? That's what is... That's his focus, right? His focus, as he's for the first step, as he's about to become king, is not where do I go? It's how do I eulogize? How do I properly, respectfully, and accurately eulogize Shaul and Yehonasan? That's a selfless person right there. That's a selfless person. So what does he do? So in a show that he manages to blend two kinnas in one. He manages to balance the eulogizing for both of them and the targeted eulogizing for Yehonasan. Let's see. First, I just want to gloss over the kinnah. It's 9 psukim long, and then we'll see how he blends in both. Right. So it begins with the classic line, "Eich nafli givarim," how the mighty have fallen. In the second pasuk, he talks about in the land of the Plishtim, we're mourning the fact that in the land of the Plishtim they're going to celebrate the victory. In the third pasuk, he gives us the image, the really tragic image of the shield of Shaul lying on the ground. In the fourth pasuk, he talks about Yehonasan and Shaul, how bravely they fought when they were alive. In the fifth pasuk, he talks about the two of them, Ne'av menim lachayim, losam lanefradu, famous line, Nesharm kalo me'arayas kavelu, swifter than eagles, stronger than lions. This is the source for that line. Then he says to mourn, crying over Shaul. And then he shifts at the end to talk about Yehonasan. Tsar li alecha, Yehonasan, ma'amti li ma'od. You're very pleasant to me. Neflasa bas chalim me'avas nashit. Your love for me was more wonderful than that of love of women. Now, first thing to notice, if you see from the blue, you can count. How many times does David mention Shaul, and how many times does he mention Yehonasan? Right? Mentions Shaul once, Yehonasan, it's 1-1. Shaul, it's 2-1. Shaul, 3-1. Yehonasan, 3-2. One second. Huh? Shaul 1, Shaul 2, Shaul 3, Shaul 4. Yehonasan, 1, Yehonasan 2, Yehonasan 3, Yehonasan 4. He mentions both of them by name 4 times each. A perfect balance. Shaul, Yehonasan, Shaul, Yehonasan. The structure of the kinnah can be seen as one single kinnah. The kinnah is set up, it's a, I like to call, chiastic structure, where you have the first line matches the last line, second line matches the second to last line, and it's all pointing towards the line in the middle. So the final line of the kinnah, the theme was Eich naflu giborim, and the last line was Eich naflu giborim. The second line of the kinnah was about the celebration of the Plishtim, and the second to last was about the mourning of David. The third line was about the death of the mighty in battle, and the third to last line, right, was about Yehonasan dying in battle. The fourth line was about the heroism of Yehonasan and Shaul. The fourth to last line was about the heroism of Shaul. So It's one very clean, symmetric kina. And what a structure like this does is clearly it points your focus to the pasuk in the middle, right? That's what the chiasm is focusing on. And it's focusing on the central image that David wants us to remember from Shaul Yonasan. He does not want us remembering the screaming and the fighting and the spear throwing and the attempted murder. He wants something else, which is also simultaneously completely true. And it's the most amazing thing that Yonasan could, you know, Shaul could try to kill Yonasan twice, and yet this can still be absolutely true for Yonasan. That Shaul Yonasan hanehavim hanim b'chayim, right? Don't think about death. Think about a wonderful thing. They were together in life. The most alone of fradu, they were together in death. Minasharim kalu, mearayas gaveru, right? That is his one line eulogy for Shaul and Yonasan together. So the kina is balanced in terms of the structure, in terms of how many times he's mentioning Shaul and Yonasan, two pieces of balance. And the third piece of balance is the core of the kina is focusing on the two of them together, Shaul and Yonasan. And I have him, Anim b'chayim, Moslem Fadu. Together they were like lions, together they were like eagles. It's one unified kina. But at the same time, there's also two kinas in one. Because if you look at it this way, look at the kina this way, you can see something amazing. David uses a technique in the kina, it's called apostrophe, where you talk to someone or something who isn't there. And that can be very powerful for a kina, clearly, because what better way of highlighting absence than by talking to someone who is not there? So David is here in his camp, and he talks to Klal Yisrael, and he talks to Har Gilboa, and he talks to daughters of Yisrael, and you can see a clear pattern with each one of these apostrophes. It's at the beginning of a pasuk, right? You know, the glory, Israel, it fell on your high places. The mountains of Gilboa, no dew and no rain will fall on you. The daughters of Shaul, the daughters of Israel, cry for Shaul. See, a consistent pattern. It's a very natural way to begin a pasuk. But the fourth apostrophe, where he talks not to an abstract entity, Israel, mountains, daughters, the most painful one, the one where he talks to the person who isn't there, he addresses Yehonasan directly. Look where that is. It's in the middle of the pasuk. What is it doing in the middle of the pasuk? It totally doesn't belong. Not only that, but the truth is, if we look at the line right before that, Eich naflu giborim besocha melchama, that would have been a perfect place for David to end the kina. You begin the kina by saying Eich naflu giborim. You can end the kina by saying Eich naflu giborim. How do we know that would be a perfect ending for the kina? Because two psukim later, that's how David does end the kina. Eich naflu giborim yavdu klei melchama. So if that is the perfect conclusion, and he wrapped it up in pasuk chafhei, why do we have an extra pasuk and a half over here? The reason is because this is a separate kina, right? The kina ends in pasuk chafhei, line number 7, and then there is a separate kina exclusively devoted to Yonasan. It's folded into the structure of the bigger one, but at the same time, there's a line and a half where David takes the time and the energy and the space to specifically address Yonasan. Why? Because he needs to. Because this is the greatest friendship of all time. This needs to be in there. And the everything changes. The previous parts of the kinnah, everything was balanced, right? They're called biblical parallelism. One, two, one, two. Don't talk in Gat. Don't talk in Ashkelon. The Plishtim will rejoice. The daughters are going to rejoice. No dew, no rain, breaks, right? So, everything is balanced, and there's a break in every single pasuk. Then you get here, and the structure just breaks down. It's one climaxing scream that David has for Yonasan. Because we're not, it's too emotional to have a beautifully, eloquently crafted kina. It's just time for David to talk from the depths of his neshama to the person who he was so closely affiliated with. Yonasan al-Wasach al-Khalal, right? And then, Sarli alecha, Yonasan. he stalks down the first person. Everything beforehand was in the third person. It was the formal kinna for Tashal and Yonasan. All of a sudden now, it's David the man talking, right? It's no longer David on behalf of Klal Yisrael. It's David the person. And David's going to need to be David the person to be a successful king of Klal Yisrael. Sarlecha, Achi Yonasan, my brother Yonasan. Na'am Tali Ma'od, not only am I in pain, but you were exceptionally pleasant to me. And then concluding, Naflasa Avas Tali Me'avas Nashim, right? Our love was greater than the love of man and woman. That Mikra has a beautiful comment. What was the very first line we ever saw when we had Yonasan and David together? Let's scroll up to the top of the source sheet. First line we ever saw by the two of them was, Nefes Yonasan Nikshra V'yad David V'yavo Nefes Yonasan K'nafsho. They first connect, the Neshamos are tied, and Yonasan loves him like himself. How do we end? We end with the same thing, right? The last thing we're told with the two of them, kaviyachol together. They're no longer literally together, but the last time that we see David talking to Yonasan, the exact same thing. Niflasa avas chali me'avas nashim. We talked the Mishnah Perkei Avos about avas she'ina tzuliya b'davar. Look, this is a love which is lasting even after death. This is a love which is lasting even after Yonasan has gone on to the Olam Ha'emes. So it's that alliance, those shared values, right? Which we can see, David puts it out there for us. We can see, and for the most part in Sefer Shmuel, David does not give us a window into his soul. We're going to have to go to Sefer Tehillim to get that. Very rare opportunity here in Sefer Shmuel. We need to have it, right? We're going to look at David as king, and it tells us so much about David that his first move to becoming king is, I need to reflect and bring out and communicate that love, that shared perspective that I had with Yonasan, while at the same time balancing it with the respect and the kavod for Shaul, who had tried to kill him so many times. It's just an unbelievable moment that puts so much of David HaMelech's greatness in perspective. If you could be one and the same with Yonasan, who Hashem saw fit to get a test that's comparable to Akedas Yitzchak, I mean, that's just the next level. So that's piece one. Just we'll stop here if anyone has any questions left to answer. But otherwise, I think there's a cool little Hanukkah reception next week that I did not know about. So this shir, now that we finally started, this shir is going to take a break next week. So I wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving and a wonderful Hanukkah Sameach. Mirtz Hashem, we will come back with more in 2 weeks, in 2 Wednesdays from now. So thanks everyone for coming, and have a great night.